Hello, I'm Mike Witz, Interrogator No. 1. I want to point out something that I think is important to point out right off the bat. Just as this gentleman practices law and may not support what's going on presently with these bills, I practice being an interrogator and don't necessarily support what's happening in interrogation. I've been sort of by chance and I don't know, the luck of the draw or something. In 1997, I met a civilian businessman who was fascinated by what I did for a living. I was an interrogator in the US Army. It was peacetime at the time, it was the Clinton days. Training was substandard at best because there was no money being funded in human intelligence gathering. It was all being spent, in the intel community, it was all being spent on bells and whistles and satellites and things. We got our initial training. We took our Arabic training, those of us that learned Arabic or whatever language we were supposed to become fluent in. Mine was Arabic and Spanish. And then that was pretty much it. You got sent to your unit. You may do some training throughout the year. There were some strat debriefs. Some people got sent at various times in other countries to do what would be more like interviewing. Certainly nothing like what you saw on the film. It would be a more relaxed situation. Be lucky if anybody even raised their voice. That was pretty much what was happening at the point when this civilian said, you know, I think people might actually pay to go through this. Now, what he was talking about this is the Survival Evasion Resistance Escape School. And that's a school that's gone on since Colonel Nick Rowe came back from Vietnam and said, I just lived hell, but I survived, and I didn't get compromised. I didn't give the enemy the information that they wanted from me. And here's how I did it. So he formed a school to teach that. The concept is that soldiers are soldiers that may be in the likely case of being captured behind enemy lines would actually prep for that situation by learning survival skills, going out to use them, getting grabbed, much like the video. This is really a simulation of this exact training where I work. Get grabbed and then go through interrogation and learn how to survive their captors, try not to compromise too much intelligence. We did change the game plan in the military in terms of how we deal with compromise. It used to be the big four, as you're probably aware of because of movies and stuff. Name, rank, serial number, date of birth. That's all you had to give, and that was all you were supposed to give. When Nick Rowe came back, he goes, hey, let's hold up on this. A lot of people give that, it sort of happened in the Korean War, but a lot of people give up that information and they end up with a bullet in their head. What the hell use is this really serving? They could be talking, they could be dealing with their captors in a different way that might actually allow them the opportunity to leave that situation and still not jeopardize lives or jeopardize whatever battle or war that we're currently fighting. So that's what survival school is. That's what SEER school is. And that is really what this was that these people went through. The phony accents are very much like SEER school. The process is very much like SEER school. This is what we've been putting our own soldiers through. This is what I've put our own soldiers through. The concept is, and probably not everyone understands it, even those that maybe work in SEER school. The concept is that if you raise someone's stress level to such an extent that they have a fight or flight response, and you raise them to that level, simultaneously you teach them how to behave by giving them what we call these in-rolls, which is, you know, hey, you better slow down, you're talking too fast, is a way of saying, hey, a resistance technique is to slow down and waste the interrogator's time. Don't start talking or you'll be forced to give out more and more and more and more. When we use that in-roll in that stress situation, we're shoving it in their head so that when the time really comes and the same stress level's raised, that they'll automatically respond properly. That's the idea. It's somewhat of an indoctrination. It's somewhat similar to the process of breaking down and building up in basic training, I would expect, not being a psychologist. Right? So that's what you see on there. That's not what's supposed to happen in interrogation. That's not what's supposed to happen in the war. That's not what I was supposed to do to the so-called enemy. My job, what I took my oath to do, was to save lives. That's what I was told I was to do. By getting information from people in the most efficient manner and the most pertinent information first, I will hopefully be able to feed that information up to the intelligence ranks that will analyze it, put all the pieces of the puzzle together, and it will end the war, save my buddy's life, do good. That's what I signed the oath to do. What we're seeing now is maybe slightly different in some cases. There are still good guys out there. Many of them are my friends. They're trying to do the right thing. But there are a lot of people that don't understand this process. There are a lot of people that don't understand what interrogation is. There are a lot of people that went to SEER school because they were officers in the military, and they might be captured at some point, who misunderstood what it really was. They weren't interrogators. And then when they had the opportunity to be in charge of something, they may have thought that was the best way to give information because it worked on them. It was never meant to be an interrogation training school. It was only meant to teach us what our horrible enemies may do to us. That was the point. That being said, I usually like to open up the floor to questions because you'll ask things that I may not have thought of, doubtful. But I give you the opportunity anyway. And I'm very open and honest, and I do these things just like I've done them since, really I've been in the media since 99, right as I got out of active duty, trying to make a difference, trying to get people to understand what interrogation is, trying to make people understand it's a psychological game, that it's subtle art, it's not torture, and anybody that looks up my name on the internet can see me saying this for years down the road, and also simultaneously saying that we're headed in a bad direction because there aren't enough of us that are talented in the art. And that's part of the problem. A lot of this abuse and various forms of neglect are really just an example of people's frustration. They're under a lot of pressure to get information, and they don't know how to do it. Anybody got a question? Yeah?
When that woman went into active stress, when her pupils were dilating and...
Yep.
If someone in the situation really fell apart in a genuinely catastrophic way,
yep,
what would be the procedure?
Well, I can tell you that, unfortunately, most of the interrogators aren't going to catch that. It's not part of our schooling. This is something, I've learned far more about interrogation, I mean far, far more about interrogation, working these Team Delta programs and working with all different kinds of clientele, be it soldiers or ROTC people, to actors, to professors, to law enforcement, to you name it, we've run them through this training. They've all come from a variety, you know, they come for a variety of reasons. And I've learned a lot from that. I also had the opportunity, I was very fortunate to be able to sort of hand select who to work with, because at the time there wasn't much going on. So a lot of the interrogators, particularly those guys that came from years past that really had really, really good experience, you know, these guys that are, you know, one of which is the founder of Delta Force, for example, I got to have them work for me, or with me, I should say. And I got to learn from those people. That was kind of part of my motivation for starting this too, besides just the wanting to get paid a little bit, right? So most people won't notice it. That's the reality. I'd be surprised if anybody did. What you don't see on the video is that Marshall saw it, and we're hypersensitive to safety. Always. We have to be. I mean, horrible things could happen for us as a company and as individuals if we fail to catch everything. And what you don't see is that when the person came down and checked the physiological responses, everything was normal. She was acting. She absolutely was acting. And it could have been just she had some initial adrenaline and some slight flashes, but Marshall took it, he jumped on it and he called it off right away. And when we evaluated the situation, we knew it wasn't the case. And I especially knew it wasn't the case when she sat in front of me and we were in that relaxed atmosphere, and she was acting confused and delirious, and then someone walked up over here, and her eyes automatically, very alertly, went over and looked at that person. I said, bingo, she's not confused. So, you know, sometimes we miss things, and, but we'd rather be safe than sorry.
So, this is a point of information. Are you saying that there's no organized instruction in the military that teaches people how to be interrogators?
That's not true. There is instruction, but because interrogation is very methodical, because it's a questioning process, it's really not all the sexy stuff you see on the cop shows and stuff. It's not all these approaches and the yelling and all that. The concentration in interrogation school, and necessarily so, is paid toward getting every single piece of information and not letting any gaps in the intel. So you spend the majority of your time in interrogation school learning how to question properly and not miss information. Mm-hmm. There's very little time spent to any sort of psychological approach. Mm-hmm. There's no time spent to stress what the prisoner acts like, how they behave, how they react, what's safe. From day one in interrogation school, you're taught that if you lay your hand on a prisoner, then you yourself will likely be a prisoner. And that's taught over and over and over and over in the course, always. There are no physical techniques whatsoever taught in interrogation school. And that's a misconception that some people have. Yeah?
Do you think there's been a shift, sort of, at least in political policy, in the way that interrogation is now seen or deployed to be a deterrent tactic in this so-called war on terror, rather than as a sort of functional tactic meant to actually extract information?
Well, that would be a larger argument as to whether we're invading a country or whether we're defending our own, right? I don't want to get on a political bent, because that's not why I'm here. I have my own opinions, but I mean, I'm talking about the practicalities of being an interrogator, right? I'm not versed in law, so it would be sort of wrong for me to even start to discuss those things. Outside of here, I mean. I think that there are a lot of problems. For one thing is, I think society is pretty well embracing that torture is the method that works. I think that, by and large, people think it works. The question I get asked most often in the media and outside is, something in reference to, did you see that interrogation on that show 24? With Jack Bauer or whatever, which I've actually watched after I kept getting all these questions because I didn't know what the hell they were talking about. And many of TV series, in many cases, he's using physical techniques to get information expediently. And so people think that works. And torture and physical techniques will get a person to talk. No doubt about it, absolutely. It's going to get a person to talk every time. But if you aren't a good interrogator, they're going to tell you exactly what you want to hear, meaning that they're going to tell you anything just to stop what's going on and get the better treatment. I mean, the only interrogation techniques, the only thing we know works right now in interrogation is that if a prisoner is under stress, then that's a good thing because it gives us something to work with. But stress of capture is many times enough stress to get that compliance. On the video, I don't know if you really gather it, because a lot of attention is being paid to Marshall and his more harsh sort of interrogation or demeanor. But generally speaking, in our programs, the people want to sit in that chair or stand in front of the interrogator as long as they possibly can, because going back with these bored guards sucks. And being forced to do work or exercise or get dirty or whatever, that sucks. They'd much rather sit down and have a nice conversation with me and let me sort of manipulate that conversation to my ends, and before you know it, I have what I need. Yeah.
And I'm sorry just to interrupt, but I think one more question and we will need to wrap it up. We have a show at 8, and I'd urge everyone to buy tickets. We do have tickets available for that show. You can purchase them in the lobby on your way out. So thanks. If you don't mind, one more question. Thanks a lot.
Go ahead.
I was just wondering, wondering, I kind of think that your, or the kind of emphasis on the practice of the practices of interrogation is sort of the same point about what's going on in Guantanamo and these other types of extradition, because, I mean, it's not the practices of interrogation necessarily, but it's the same practices of incarceration that Kendall Thomas was just talking about that happen in U.S. prisons as well as these.
It's a lack of checks and balances. Abu Ghraib is a lack of checks and balances.
But it's not just their lack of checks and balances, because the whole purpose of the practices of incarceration is to prepare the enemy combatant or the terrorist.
You won't find one military police officer that's been taught that in their school. In fact, the biggest problem we have in interrogation, if you look at Guantanamo Bay right now, and the real struggles they're having, and there are high-level Al-Qaeda in Guantanamo Bay, I know for a fact, but the problem is they didn't segregate properly because they don't have a good system worked out with the guard staff. And they also don't have the logistics to segregate people properly. So the biggest, the absolute biggest problem they're having is everybody can talk. Everybody's got a way to inform the other prisoner what's going on, what the US government's looking for. They have a way. So the communication is rampant, and it has been all along. And there's no stress. There's zip for stress. They've been there longer than most of the personnel have been there. Personnel's on a rotation. Prisoners are there for good. There's no stress to work with. They're not getting anything out of these guys. They're not going to. They're not going to. So now we're in this dilemma of, well, we've got, I don't know how many we've got now, what, 400, 420, something, I don't know, prisoners down there. What the hell do we do with them? If they were innocent to begin with, let's say they were all innocent to begin with. If we grabbed up all of you guys and ran you off and kept you in prison for years, you'd be pretty pissed off. When you got out, you might do something about it. So what the hell do we do now?